A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
There's no such thing as a free lunch. But the whole point of this exercise is to find the lunch that's as close to free as possible, and then figure out how to get invited back every day without anyone noticing you're not paying.
Daniel's really outdone himself this time. He's asking us to inhabit the mind of a career counselor who's given up. Someone who's seen too many burnouts, too many people who chased excellence and got a stress ulcer for their trouble. This counselor isn't advising people toward rewarding work. He's advising them toward the easiest rides in the workforce. Good income, minimal training, and an industry-wide tolerance for putting in the absolute minimum effort. Not just tolerated, celebrated by peers and superiors alike. Where in the modern workforce can you collect a good salary for doing almost nothing?
So today we're putting on our most cynical counselor's hat and going hunting for the easiest rides in the workforce. The jobs where the gap between effort and compensation is as wide as it gets.
And the first thing we have to do is define what we're actually looking for, because this isn't about being lazy, it's about being strategic. This isn't unemployment or welfare. It's a salaried position where the value you provide and the effort you expend have almost nothing to do with each other.
The goal isn't to avoid work entirely. It's to find work that demands the least of you while paying the most, the highest salary per unit of effort expended. Our disaffected counselor would call it effort efficiency.
David Graeber wrote about this in 2018, his book Bullshit Jobs. He estimated that 37 to 40% of workers in the UK and Netherlands felt their jobs were pointless, but Graeber was focused on meaninglessness. A bullshit job can be exhausting. You could be running around all day doing something you know doesn't matter. What we're hunting is different. An easy ride is specifically low effort. The work might actually matter. The oil refinery operator's job matters enormously. He just doesn't have to do much most of the time.
Graeber had this great example of a guy who was paid to guard an empty room. Literally, an empty room in a university building. He sat there for years. That's the platonic ideal of what we're talking about. Except he was probably paid terribly. Our counselor wants the version of that with a six-figure salary.
So the framework is, what roles pay well, require minimal training, and tolerate, or even celebrate, doing just enough to not get fired. And the key insight our counselor would start with is that the best jobs aren't advertised as easy rides. They're hidden in plain sight. You have to know what to look for.
The first thing he'd tell you to look for is what I'm going to call insurance value. These are roles where the employee is paid not for constant action, but for their potential to act. The job's difficulty is inversely correlated with how well the system around it's designed.
The classic example is the overnight IT worker. You've seen the Reddit threads r/sysadmin r/IT career questions. There are sysadmins and network engineers out there earning six figures to sit in data centers, watch Netflix, and reboot a server once a month. The job's value is in availability, not activity. If everything goes right, they do nothing. And the company is thrilled about that because the alternative is everything going wrong.
I've read posts from guys who say they automated their entire job in the first 3 months and then just didn't tell anyone. One guy wrote a script that handled 95% of his tickets. He'd come in, run the script, and spend the rest of his shift learning to play guitar. His boss thought he was the most reliable person on the team.
The mechanism, there's exactly what you said, insurance value. The company isn't paying for 40 hours of labor. They're paying for the guarantee that if something breaks at 3 in the morning, someone who knows what they're doing is already there. The fact that nothing usually breaks is the point. That's success.
And the tolerance for minimal effort is baked into the structure. Nobody's standing over the overnight guy's shoulder. He's alone. The metrics that matter are uptime and incident response time. If those numbers are good, nobody asks what he did with the other 11 hours and 58 minutes.
Another archetype, the oil refinery control room operator. Bureau of Labor Statistics data puts these roles at $80,000 to $120,000 a year. You're sitting in a control room watching automated systems run. The work is 99% boredom, 1% panic. But that 1%, when an alarm goes off and you have 30 seconds to prevent a catastrophe, is so critical that the salary stays high. The industry tolerates the low daily effort because the system is designed to run itself. The human is insurance.
And here's the thing. The boredom is actually a feature, not a bug. If the operator is busy, something has gone wrong. A busy refinery operator is a refinery that's about to be on the news. So, the entire culture of the job is built around vigilance during long stretches of nothing. Nobody's asking for productivity reports. They're asking if the lights are still green.
That's the thread that runs through all of these roles. The job isn't about production, it's about presence.
Which brings us to government and civil service. Strong union protections, defined benefit pensions, and roles where output is measured by time served rather than productivity. DMV clerks, permit processors, certain administrative roles in large bureaucracies. The Bureau of Labor Statistics shows government administrative roles have some of the lowest turnover rates in the economy, often below 5% annually. That's a structural indicator that minimal effort is tolerated. People don't leave jobs where they're overworked and underpaid. They leave jobs where the effort-to-reward ratio is bad. Low turnover means the ratio is good.
And in a large bureaucracy, the mechanism is different from the overnight IT guy. It's not insurance value, it's diffusion of accountability. If you're one of 40 people processing permits, and your output is slightly below average, who's going to notice? Who's going to care enough to go through the 6-month disciplinary process? The cost of addressing mediocrity is higher than the cost of tolerating it.
The union protections add another layer. You can't just be fired for being slow. There's a process. There are hearings. There's documentation. Most managers look at that and decide that a slightly underperforming employee who shows up on time and doesn't cause problems is fine. Perfectly fine.
The legacy employee in a large corporation is a related archetype. This is someone who's been in a role so long that their institutional knowledge is valuable, but their actual workload has been automated or redistributed over the years. They're paid for what they know, not what they do. The organization tolerates their low effort because firing them would be more trouble than it's worth, and because they're the only person who knows why that one database was set up in 1997 and what happens if you change the indexing.
I knew a guy like this at a telecom. He'd been there 25 years. His job title was something like Senior Systems Architect. His actual job was answering 2 questions a month about a billing system that had been replaced in 2010, but still ran in parallel for a handful of legacy accounts. He played a lot of solitaire, made $140,000 a year. When they finally decommissioned the system, they gave him a retirement package and a plaque. He was celebrated. His peers thought he was a genius for pulling it off.
So we found the easy rides. The overnight monitor, the refinery operator, the senior bureaucrat, the legacy employee. But here's where it gets complicated. These roles are fragile.
That's the knock-on effect our disaffected counselor would warn you about. The easy ride depends on the system staying broken in just the right way. If the refinery automates the monitoring entirely, and they're working on it, the operator is gone. If the IT system gets a proper failover and redundancy, the overnight watch becomes redundant. The easy ride is a temporary equilibrium, not a permanent career.
And you can't predict when the equilibrium breaks. The legacy employee at the telecom, he was safe for 15 years, right up until he wasn't. The day they decided to decommission that old billing system, his entire value proposition evaporated. He was lucky they gave him a package. The next guy might just get laid off.
There's also a cultural contradiction here that's worth unpacking. In a production-obsessed world, these roles are simultaneously envied and despised. The quiet quitting trend of 2022 and 2023 showed workers openly discussing doing only what their job description required. But the easy ride predates that label by decades. Peers celebrate the life hack of getting paid to do nothing. Man, you've got it made. But superiors often resent it.
The tolerance for minimal effort is inversely correlated with how visible the role is. The best easy rides are invisible ones. The overnight IT guy is invisible by definition. He works when nobody's there. The refinery operator is invisible because he's in a control room behind a locked door. The legacy employee is invisible because nobody remembers what he does. Visibility is the enemy. The moment someone in management can see you not working, the equilibrium breaks.
Which means the personality profile of the successful Easy Rider isn't what people assume. They're not lazy. They're strategically disengaged. They know when to appear busy, how to manage up, and when to deliver just enough to avoid scrutiny. The skill isn't in doing the work. It's in managing the perception of work.
That's the misconception our counselor would want to bust immediately. People think these jobs are for slackers who don't want to do anything, but pulling off an easy ride for years requires a specific skill set. You have to read the organization well enough to know exactly where the line is and never cross it. You have to maintain relationships so that when someone does notice your output is low, they don't care enough to act. You have to tolerate boredom that would drive most people insane.
And that last one is the hidden cost. The boredom. We'll come back to that.
Let's build the list our disaffected counselor would actually hand to a client. What niche roles fit the criteria? Number 1. Overnight infrastructure monitoring in any industry. Data centers, network operation centers, power plants, water treatment facilities. Anywhere that runs 24/7 and needs a human to watch the screens during the graveyard shift.
Number 2. Senior administrative roles in heavily unionized public sectors. Not the frontline jobs where you're dealing with the public. Those can be brutal. The back office roles. The ones where you process forms that nobody's waiting for urgently. Permitting offices, records departments, certain regulatory compliance roles.
Number 3. Quality assurance and legacy software systems that are too expensive to replace. COBOL banking systems are the classic example. These systems run the world's financial infrastructure and nobody wants to touch them. The QA engineer runs the same test every quarter, tests that were written 15 years ago, and collects a salary that reflects the fact that if the tests don't get run and something breaks, the bank loses millions. The bank is paying for the disaster that doesn't happen.
Number 4. Safety roles in industries where the main job is to be present in case of emergency. The safety officer on a construction site that's had zero incidents for a decade. The job is to stand there and look official. But if something does go wrong and you weren't there, the liability is enormous. So you're there, every day, doing nothing, and everyone's happy about it.
Number 5. Academic research positions with soft funding that require minimal teaching. The researcher on a grant that hasn't been audited in 5 years, who's published nothing but is still collecting the salary because the grant paperwork says they're working on something. These are rarer than they used to be. Universities have gotten better at tracking outputs, but they still exist. Soft money means the funding comes from outside the university, and outside funders are often less diligent about checking productivity than department heads.
The catch with all of these is that they're hard to find advertised as such. Nobody posts a job listing that says, come do nothing for $90,000 a year. These roles are discovered through insider knowledge, nepotism, or sheer luck. The counselor's real advice isn't a list of jobs, it's a framework for recognizing them. Look for roles where the primary value is presence, not production. Look for roles where the system is designed to run itself and the human is the backup. Look for roles where output is hard to measure and accountability is diffuse.
And look for roles where the cost of failure is high but the probability of failure is low. That's the sweet spot. The refinery operator, the overnight IT guy, the COBOL QA engineer, in all of these, if they do their job perfectly, nothing happens. And nothing usually happens. So they're paid for the nothing that usually happens, because the something that occasionally happens would be catastrophic.
The ethical dimension... Here's interesting. Is this quiet quitting before the term existed? Or is it a rational response to a labor market that demands ever-increasing productivity without proportional reward? Our disaffected counselor would argue the latter. He's not giving immoral advice. He's giving survival advice. The system will burn you out if you let it. Finding an easy ride is just opting out of the burnout track.
There's a philosophical question underneath all of this. If a system is designed to run without human intervention, and the human is only there as insurance, is it unethical to collect the insurance premium without doing anything most of the time? The company made the calculation. They decided the cost of employing you is less than the cost of the risk you're insuring against. You're just accepting their terms.
The quiet quitting trend made this explicit in a way it hadn't been before. People started saying out loud, "I'm going to do exactly what my job description says and nothing more. Not because I'm lazy, but because the extra effort was never being rewarded anyway. The easy ride is just quiet quitting taken to its logical extreme. Find a job where the job description itself is so minimal that doing exactly what it says is almost nothing."
But here's the thing our counselor might not tell you up front. These jobs have a psychological cost, and that's where I think we need a voice from someone who's actually lived this.
Hilbert.
$85,000 the year. 2003. Server farm outside Phoenix. I sat in a cold room. They kept it at 62 degrees for the equipment and watched blinking lights. 12-hour shifts, 4 nights a week. The manager told me on my first day, "If you have to do anything, something has already gone wrong." I was there 18 months. I wrote most of a novel. It was terrible. Not the novel. Well, also the novel. But the experience. The boredom was crushing. You'd think getting paid to do nothing is the dream, but about 3 months in, you start to feel like you're disappearing, like the lack of friction is eroding something. I'd come home and my wife would ask how work was, and I'd say, "The lights blinked," and she'd say, "That's nice," and we'd both know I was making $85,000 a year to say that sentence. The other guys on the shift, there were 4 of us rotating, they all had different ways of handling it. One guy ran a side business selling vitamins online. One guy watched every movie that came out that year. I mean, every single one. One guy just went blank. He'd been there 9 years and he'd gone blank. Nice guy. Nothing behind the eyes anymore.
What made you quit?
I finished the novel, sent it to an agent, got rejected. And I realized I'd been sitting in that cold room for 1.5 years and the only thing I had to show for it was a rejection letter and a weird relationship with blinking lights. I quit the next week. The manager was surprised. He said most people don't leave. The money's too good. The work's too easy. He said the ones who leave are the ones who can't stand the silence. I was one of those.
The easy ride wasn't easy.
It was easy in every way that didn't matter. The money was easy. The work was easy. The hours were easy. But I felt like a fraud, and I felt like I was rotting, and I couldn't tell which was worse. You're trading your sense of purpose for a paycheck, and that trade gets harder the longer you make it. At first you think you're getting away with something. After a while, you realize the thing you're getting away with is your own life.
That's the hidden cost our disaffected counselor's framework ignores. The easy ride exists, but it comes with its own form of burnout, the burnout of irrelevance.
What's interesting is that you said the other guys had side businesses, hobbies, distractions. They were filling the void. The one who went blank, he didn't fill it. That's the risk. If you don't bring something to the job, a novel, a side business, a rich inner life, the job takes something from you. Ilbert, the vitamin guy, he was the happiest one there. He wasn't just collecting a paycheck, he was funding his real life. The server farm was just the mechanism. I think that's the only way these jobs work long term. You have to have something else. The job can't be the thing, it's just the engine.
The counselor's advice needs an addendum. Find the easy ride, yes, but only if you have something to fill the hours with. Otherwise, you're not getting a free lunch. You're getting a lunch that costs you your sanity.
In a world that increasingly measures everything, how long can these invisible roles survive? The refinery operator is being automated. The overnight IT guy is being replaced by better monitoring software and cloud failover. The legacy employee's system eventually gets decommissioned. These roles are disappearing, slowly but steadily.
Which means the people who built their careers around strategic disengagement are going to hit a wall. They'll be 45 or 50, with a resume that says they did very little for 20 years, and the one niche they found will have closed. What then?
The counselor probably doesn't have an answer for that. His framework is about the present. Find the ride now, optimize for now. The long-term fragility is someone else's problem.
There's no such thing as a free lunch. But there are lunches that cost you in different currencies. The question is which currency you're willing to spend. Money's easy. Time is harder. Purpose is the most expensive of all.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping the lights blinking.
Find us at myweirdprompts.com or email us at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.